The opinions expressed in the following program are solely those of the host.
The following program may contain coarse language and is intended for an adult audience. Listener discretion is strongly advised.
Welcome to the hottest show on the Internet G-Band, broadcasting from outside the limits of convention. This is radio without borders, without rules, and without reservation.
With your hosts, Radio Free G, joined by super producer Mumbles.
Search for Radio Free G on iTunes, or you may head to the website radiofreeg.blogspot.com. Welcome to the G-Band.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. This is your host, Radio Free G, along with super producer Mumbles. We are bringing you episode 24. That's right, listenership. You are the ones that made it happen. We are now one episode shy of the quarter century mark. This is the, it's Canada Day. So for those of you that don't know, that would make it 1 July 2007. And I am going way back into the files I have of possible show ideas. And I'm breaking out a news article that I'm going to lead off the show with. Then we're going to get to, one of my personal highlights, which is the show becoming recursive upon itself for content. This is what I was aiming for right at the very beginning. I thought that reaching this point would be the pinnacle of Radio Free G, and it has now arrived. And then we are going to get to a very special edition of Ask the G-Man. This particular edition comes from a question that a listener submitted dealing with one topic, namely male waxing. And we are going to expand that topic and take it all the way to dealing with issues of homosexuality, lesbianism, and the recently completed Gay Pride Parade here in the Greater Toronto area. Now, before we get to the newspaper article entitled Dr. Death Returns, discussing the now released and freed back into society Jack Kevorkian, I want to take 1 second and direct everyone's attention to the blog at radiofreeg.blogspot.com. In the past few weeks, I have received legal notifications, cease and desist orders from I don't know if it's a company or one person, but there is an industry around a poem entitled Do You Live Your Dash? You can Google that right now. I'll wait for you to go. You can have me on in the background. You will see that there is an entire cottage industry built around this poem. Now, a previous episode dealt with poetry in general. Actually, two previous episodes. If you go to the blog, scan down the show archives in the right-hand sidebar, or simply head to postings that took place in February of 2006. Sorry, make that 2007. You will see that there is a posting for episode 8, which has many recent additions to it. Let me give you a little bit of background. I had the entire text of the poem in my blog posting. Now, I did not claim authorship of the poem. I am not selling anything with the poem on it. I didn't take the text and put it on a t-shirt and try to profit by it. I simply put up that poem to encourage my listenership, to encourage people who happen to even stumble upon my blog using the next blog button on Blogger. That poem was meant to be appreciated by anyone who happened to stumble across it. And I wanted to direct people to where they could get more information about the poem, about the author, about anything that had to do with that poem. As a fan, now this is important, as a fan, I was not profiting from this in the least. So I receive an email saying that I have trod upon someone's digital rights, and I must remove the poem, otherwise the blog will be shut down. At the very least, that particular posting will be removed, and I will be in danger of, transgressing bloggers' terms of service. So I had to get rid of the poem, and you can go there and you can read the diatribe that I wrote. Members of the listenership posted comments delving into the legalities of digital rights management. Now, because I'm in Canada, I'm sure that this company that Linda Ellis is based in the United States, so there are some differences there. Blogger is hosted and run from the US, so they operate under a different set of rules. But the point is, this was a large corporation taking on little old me. I was shocked and amazed that they had even heard of me, that they had found me online. It just goes to show you that the hyperbole I give you about Radio Free G, about the enterprise, about the legacy that I am trying to build here, is not all smoke and mirrors. This is a message that is getting out there. You should get in on the ground floor and tell all your friends about it. To have them do this, to come after me, which is really going after everyone in the listenership as well, that is a slap in the face. Now, I have Mumbles, and I have RFG Media, but we are not an international conglomerate. We are not a media concern, in the Japanese sense of the word. So I don't have the legal wherewithal, or ability, or resources to take on Linda Ellis. However, I made it very clear on the blog that if I did, I would fight her till the ends of the earth. We must pick our battles in life, so we had to let this one go. But not without making our point known. So as I said, if you go and look up that posting, look up episode 8 on the blog, you'll be able to read the comments that are there, and the comments that were posted by members of the listenership trying to defend me, because they know that I'm in the right. Let's be honest here. One legal letter carries a lot of weight behind it. And if I had anyone available to me to be able to fight that, I would have made front page news with it. I would have had the opportunity to attack her and her faceless corporation, not only in the court system itself, but I would have been able to attack them on the G-band, giving daily updates, telling them exactly what I think of them and their holier-than-thou, high and mighty, screw them and the horse they rode in on attitude towards people who enjoy and appreciate poetry. Let's be honest, these people are a dying breed. That's why I did not one show called Poetry Slam, I did two, because Poetry Slam 1 received so much feedback. At the time, it received the greatest amount of feedback in the history of Radio Free G that it demanded the first and only ever sequel that I have produced. To those people who think that they can take away the beauty of poetry, to those people who think that they can publish a journal, publish something online, and then believe that they own that particular piece of artistic work, not in the common legal sense, but in the owning sense of it is mine, and you must recognize that it is mine, and you can only appreciate it when I give you permission to appreciate it. To those people, I tell you this. There will be more people like me who take up this cause in the new millennium. Your old world, invisible hand, free market, economic way of thinking is coming to an end. It is time for the people to rise up and take back what is theirs. It is time for the people to stand up, take notice, and recognize that the artistic endeavors of individuals, yes, they should be allowed to profit from them, but they should not be allowed to control how people enjoy them. I am but the first one to come out and take this cause up. I hope that I can inspire the next generation of people who will have the means, who will have the wherewithal, who will have the ability, who will have the desire, and who will have the passion to find you where you sleep and bring the battle to your front door. Poetry, sculpture, painting, these are all manifestations of art with a capital A, and the aesthetic belongs to the world. You can't own it, you can't buy it. Maybe you can learn it if you subject yourself to it and struggle with it, but you cannot say, this is mine and mine alone. You are the ones that are going to be fighting a losing battle, and I'm going to make sure that you are the ones who suffer in the end. Now, speaking of suffering, this brings us to our discussion on Mr. Kevorkian. I will not call him doctor, because a doctor is someone who helps you to heal. A doctor is someone who, if you look at all the streams of medicine, both mainstream and outside the mainstream, medicine at its best allows you to heal yourself. Medicine at its best takes you into the consideration of the healing process and allows you to work with your doctor to get better. Mr. Kevorkian, on the other hand, is a doctor of death. He is a killer. He may hide behind the sweet-tasting platitudes of mercy, but when you dig into his story, you know that there is something going on. This is a man with no respect for life. He is the definition of irony.
The pimp hand is strong, but the whore hand is mighty. You're listening to Radio Free G.
To help frame this, I would like to read for you some passages from the article that inspired this discussion on Kevorkian. This article is entitled Dr. Death Returns, Jack Kevorkian Set to Cash In Following Release from Prison. It comes from the comment section of the Toronto Sun, dated Friday, 25 May 2007. The author is Licia Corbella. This fine journalist's first name is spelled L-I-C-I-A. I apologize for any mispronunciation. And she can be reached at licia.corbella@sunmedia.ca. I would like to quote now from the article. Quote, many people who don't fully understand what Kevorkian did in his past believe he is a hero for advocating legalized assisted suicide. Nothing could be further from the truth. Kevorkian did not, as many people believe, simply help terminally ill people living in excruciating pain commit suicide. Rather, he helped kill many people who suffered from no terminal illnesses and were often just mildly depressed. Many of his patients were under the age of 40 and suffering from no disease at all. According to an extensive investigation by the Detroit Free Press, March 3, 1997, Kevorkian has consistently violated most rules and safeguards he claimed to follow. He often, for instance, did not observe a minimum 24-hour waiting period before helping people die, and in at least one case, the waiting period was just 1 hour. Of the 47 suicides linked to Kevorkian that were extensively investigated by the Detroit Free Press, at least 60% of Kevorkian's suicide patients were not terminal. At least 17 could have lived indefinitely. And in 13 cases, the people had no complaints of pain. End quote. Kevorkian is a shining example of what the late Pope John Paul II called the culture of death. That this man can come out of prison and demand money on the lecture circuit, up to $50,000 for an interview, according to the estimates given by one of his lawyers. That is a crying shame. The lecture circuit is usually where people go once they have finished terms in public office, once they have been recognized public leaders, such as British Prime Minister Tony Blair, such as United States presidents, most notably Bill Clinton going on the lecture circuit. These are people, regardless of what you think about their politics, they did something in the world. They tried to make the world a better place. Kevorkian has not made the world a better place. He has not even tried to make the world better for the people he was trying to help. How can you help someone by killing them? Now, I grant you, there are probably arguments to be made in terms of war, in terms of extenuating circumstances, that would justify a mercy killing. But not this. This treats people like animals. Things take place within the fog of war that will never see the light of day within the confines of civilized society. Kevorkian was contacted by healthy individuals to come and end their own lives. There can be no case made for this. This devalues life itself. This makes a mockery of life. Because according to Kevorkian and the rules that he frequently abused, that he set up himself, if you're having a bad day, just kill yourself. If there's any struggle in your life, you don't have to take it. Call up his 1-800 number. He'll be right there with the suicide machine and a freshly swabbed needle. Now, I don't understand why anyone would want to hear anything that Kevorkian has to say about anything. What does he have to add to any discussion? He obviously runs straight to the ultimate final solution. on any given topic. I don't want to get into personal views about suicide. I have known people who have taken their own lives. There are current stories out there right now about murder suicides. I'm doing a little bit of reading about that right now. This man, Kevorkian, deserves nothing. He, in my view, has lost anything in terms of respect, anything in terms of what the world does owe him as a human being. He is not a human being. He is a monster. He is no better than an animal that turns and looks only at its own short-term benefit. He may be couched in the lies of compassion. He may be operating under the auspices of he loves life so much he hates to see someone live a poor one, but his own history betrays the fact that he operates at cross purposes. I will give the final word on this to Ms. Corbella. Quote, "He, Kevorkian, is a murdering sadist, obsessed by death. That he now stands to enrich himself as a result is symptomatic of a truly sick society." End quote. I encourage everyone in the listenership to find this article, to read it for yourselves, to get in touch with Ms. Corbella and thank her for putting out an article like this, because most of the people who listen to my show, I would hazard to guess, are those in the 25 to 40 range. We are the children of baby boomers. We are the children of that generation, that monstrous blight of a generation that I have taken issue with many times in many episodes. And they are the ones who are going to be coming to this decision in their lives en masse. They represent many things in the world. To me, the baby boomer generation represents the greatest collection, the greatest number of medical guinea pigs, ready, willing, and able to try anything and everything on their rapidly degenerating bodies, as many of them while in their 50s or possibly even early 60s refer to themselves as being in middle age. How much delusion do these people live in to extend the life that they have come to love, the life of perpetual youth, of never getting old, of having the media cater to them and make them feel forever young because they happen to have the biggest wallets. They are coming for a rude awakening. By the time I reach that stage in life, I plan to see a whole slew of drugs that have been tested on human guinea pigs where I know exactly what I'm going to be getting. So I thank the baby boomers for that. Their ego will extend my life, will extend the quality and quantity of days that I have remaining on this planet. And for that, baby boomers, I thank you. However, I don't want to see my parents die. No one does. I don't want to see them take their own lives either. I don't want anyone to be in the situation where they have to choose if they continue living. You don't choose when your time is up. When you're called to go, you go. There's no extending it. Yes, you can have transplants and we can have transfusions and maybe in a few years we'll become some sort of crazy amalgamation cyborg type entity where parts of our body are wetware and parts of our body are still flesh and blood. But we will never reach the point where we achieve true immortality. We are contingent beings. We have a definite beginning. We will have a definite end. That is a law of the universe that we cannot circumvent. No matter how much money we have, we cannot buy 1 second more than we have been portioned out. You know when that moment comes that you look back on your life and you hope that you lived a good one. You better hope and pray that you lived a good life, because that determines if you go up or if you go down forever. I won't get into the intricacies of Pascal's wager, because that would be an entirely different topic, and I take issue with some of the things that Pascal says. There are some holes to his logic, but in general, to paraphrase it, if you believe in God, if you believe in heaven and hell, if you believe in the afterlife, and you do what you can on Earth now to ensure your place in heaven, and you're wrong, well, you haven't really lost anything. If you don't believe, and you're wrong, you've lost everything. I did not think that I was going to devote this much time to someone like Kevorkian that I truly despise. So let's have the liner for the G-Band line. Let's make sure that everyone knows that there are many different ways to interact with the show. You can send your comments and show ideas to radiofreeg@gmail.com. You can call the toll-free in North America 1-888-494-2263 number, or you can simply leave a comment under any show posting on the blog at radiofreeg.blogspot.com. So we'll play the liner for the 1-888 G-band line, letting you know how you can get in touch with the show, and then we'll head into another fantastic piece of radio drama where we try and help the listenership by answering all the questions you submit to Ask the G-Man. Do you have a comment or show idea?
Do you have a phone?
The G-Band is now open 24/7, toll-free from anywhere in North America. Call 1-888-49-G-Band. That's 1-888-494-2263 to leave a message for the man, the myth, the growing legend that is Radio Free G. Today's call comes from a member of the listenership that is struggling with the difference between the representation of gender roles in our society. I'm sure that everyone has asked this same question of themselves when they look in the mirror. Let's hear the question. With problems like that, you don't really have much going on in life, do you? I think you need to ask the G-Man.
G-Man, tell me something. I'd like to ask the G-Man a question, and that is, how do you feel about male waxing? And we're not talking just, you know, legs. We're talking around the ass, around the pubes, a little bit on the face. What are your thoughts on male waxing? Thank you.
Well, let me tell you, when it comes to male waxing, you really have to break the issue down and recognize the history of it and the difference between the two genders. Now, men have been, depending on their profession, have been altering their body hair for years and years. People who are involved in some of the athletic pursuits, such as swimming and cycling, have been removing their body hair. Those in bodybuilding, some people may take issue as to whether that is a sport, but in terms of an athletic endeavor, when they do the pose downs, a lot of those guys take off every single hair on their body, even the hair on their head, on their scalp. They prefer to go bald, to have at least a super close cropped shave. Of course, because you need to see the definition in the body, in the muscles, in the striation of the skin. Even men involved in acting have been doing this. So it's not really a big deal. If you can cut one piece of hair on your body, it doesn't matter where any other piece of hair is on your body. Now, the only difference is that men have the choice because of the way society is structured. Women cannot walk around like a grizzly bear. They don't have that choice. They are allowed to have hair on their head, and if they don't want to be considered a bull dyke, it has to be below their shoulders. A guy, on the other hand, can walk around with 2 weeks' growth on his face, and nobody will bat an eye. They'll just assume that he's growing a beard for some strange reason. Maybe, you know, it's wintertime and he wants to stay warm. It just doesn't matter. I can have hair on my legs and just, well, the hair's on my legs. Sorry, I didn't get around to cutting it, and I don't want to. I don't have to. I have no reason, because I'm not a bodybuilder or in the entertainment industry. I'm not a professional wrestler. I don't have to play the game of personal vanity and get rid of that hair. And for a guy, the situation, as I'm trying to point out, it is completely different. Women get the short end of the stick on this. It's not fair, but that seems to be the way that the world is. It's almost a symbol of the general place that women occupy in society, which is not fair and is slowly changing to the credit of women who are making their position known and bringing issues of gender roles and gender equality to the forefront in society. Yet, on the whole, women still suffer discrimination for being women, whether it's paying taxes on purely feminine products, whether it is in the workplace being paid on average less than men for performing similar duties. That is the state of the world, right or wrong, as it is right now. Oddly enough, the best example of this type of treatment comes not from issues arising out of heterosexual engagements, but rather from issues arising out of the homosexual dynamic. Recently here in the Greater Toronto Area, the citizens of downtown Toronto had the pleasure of experiencing the Gay Pride Parade. Now, for those of you unaware, the Toronto Gay Pride Parade is one of the oldest, and quite possibly the largest, for sure the second largest, I'm thinking of San Francisco for some reason, but for sure one of the premier gay pride events that take place on this continent and in the world. So, they always have, you know, the whoever the wannabe mayors are, they go down and they squirt each other with water cannons and get all frisky with the TV media, and of course the day after, or the day of, on the 6 o'clock news, you always have the shots of all the painted, sculpted, relatively naked bodies of men on floats. This is an example of where women get the short end of the stick, because even though it is called Gay Pride Parade, it is predominantly the male homosexuals that dominate that day. The women have their own spectacle called, affectionately, the Dyke March. Now, I'm not making this up. They have it on the day that immediately precedes the Gay Pride Parade. Not only is it on a separate day, it is a much shorter parade route, and it doesn't get anywhere near the mainstream media attention that the formal Gay Pride Parade receives, which is a celebration predominantly of male homosexuality. Female homosexuality gets shuffled off to the back pages. Now that's sad, because you have the term they prefer to use is queer, which encompasses transsexual, transgendered, gay, lesbian, bi, whatever flavor you want to put in there that's not heterosexual, even within that queer label, which by most reputable accounts, it is a rather small percentage of the population, anywhere from 8 to 10%. I don't know where the actual science is to back up that figure, but that is the figure that you will see in pro-queer literature. That 8 to 10% is subdivided itself again, and there is a ghettoization of lesbianism. You can call it what you want, but that is what we have. We have the ghettoization of lesbianism in the mainstream media today. And you can see it if you follow any sort of celebrity news or anything. Being gay is not the same as being lesbian, even though they are in essence the same thing. So, caller, I hope that answered your question. Feel free to wax any part of your body. You sound like you're just looking for permission, so go nuts. Zing! Oh man, I couldn't resist that. And one last thing, some of you may wonder where the fantastic music, the intro and outro music, is coming from today. Normally I take a song, either a popular song off the radio, or a song that I've enjoyed listening to in the past that I think should be heard more on the radio, and I try to fit it in with the theme of the show. Now, I have found online a place to obtain royalty-free music where the only cost for using the music is giving proper credit to its creator. I want to tell you right now that the music you are listening to, the title of that piece of music is called Shiny Tech 2. This is produced by a wonderful gentleman named Kevin MacLeod. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. The last name is spelled MacLeod. He has a website, incompetech.com, I-N-C-O-M, PETECH.com. You can go there, and not only can you use the compositions that he puts up on the internet for free, of course, you have to give notification. Anyone who goes to the website, I have put a special sidebar item directing people to him, but he will also compose music for you on demand if you require anything special. He is a great man. He has great talent. I hope everyone out there who is either putting out a podcast or simply needs music for any particular item that they are working on, get in touch with him. He does excellent work. And there we have episode 24 of Radio Free G. Remember, just like this caller, just like this faithful member of the listenership, you can call 1-888-49-G-BAND, get in touch with me, have your questions answered on the Ask the G-Man segment. We will be back sooner rather than later. Even though it's the summer, we don't plan on taking too much of an extended break. We will be working on another episode, always looking for ideas, always looking for topics. You send it in, and I will put it on the air. Catch you again next time on the G-Band. End transmission.
You have been listening to Radio Free G. Send all feedback and show ideas to radiofreeg@gmail.com or visit the website at radiofreeg.blogspot.com. Catch you again next time on the G-Band. End transmission.